United States against Rivera. Mr. Price.
My name is Elliot Price. I represent the parties in the joint brief and also Mr. Majanowski individually.
You would speak before the microphone. Do not touch the microphone.
I'm sorry.
Just stand before the microphone. We can't hear you when you're over there, and please start from the top.
Okay. Your Honors, what I believe the highlights of the joint brief are, or is a joint brief, I know you've read it, are two issues. The sufficiency of the evidence, which is often and most times a very difficult argument to make, regarding the cocaine that was allegedly cooked in this apartment. It significantly contributes to the sentences in this case.
Why does that matter? That was only 25 kilos or so out of 350 kilos. Not to mention the fact that the jury wasn't required to believe the defense witness who thought that there'd be no residue. But why do we care about this 25 kilos?
Well, I guess where I'm directing it towards is that the jury made a finding of at least 5 kilograms.
Right. And so there are 325 left after we eliminate these.
However, the sentences will still be increased.
Under the guidelines? I mean, it seems to me that unless you can tell me that the zone goes up, I think they were already pretty much at the ceiling by the time they had 325.
Well, I guess the question then becomes whether or not the court had the ability to determine the amount of drugs that were involved in this case, because it all reels itself back. They were charged with at least 5, and the number grew to this gigantic number. I think the Macedo case, unless I misread it, the court's going to have to decide, go back for a decision, and it appears that this was a judge-induced enhancement. So in our opinion, anything that can take away any number of kilograms from this case under reconsideration is significant.
I certainly can understand if what you're saying is that there should be a limited Palladino remand vis-a-vis the sentence. Maybe the 25 makes a difference. Maybe the court finding of the whole 350 makes a difference. I don't see how it actually goes to the sufficiency of the evidence for the conviction. Mm. So that's the line I would ask you to address.
Okay. Well, I guess it underlines the theory of the case was that all this cooking was going on, these drugs were being distributed. It was all woven together. It was in the Liss apartment. And when it came down to putting before the jury some actual proof of this drug dealing, except for words, their proof was going to be that this apartment was used to cook these drugs. It was an element of this case. Mm-hmm. And when it came to the point where I guess the government said, hey, maybe we better take a look at this apartment and see whether there was really something done here, it turned out that their findings were negative. Dr. Moriarty's findings were negative. And therefore, who could you believe? And
up to the jury to decide whether it was going to believe the testimony of the witnesses as opposed to this expert who thought that you needed turpentine to clean it off the walls or whatever he was saying, some organic solvent?
Well, I guess ultimately, yes, it is for the jury to decide.
Yeah.
The jury may not have been able to decide that issue beyond a reasonable doubt given that information.
Maybe.
Contradictory information offered by the government as well as the defense as to what took place.
All right.
So,
Are you arguing for Mr. Mieczkowski also right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I'm going to.
What I was wondering was why we shouldn't consider your argument regarding the extortion instruction waived, given that that argument was not at all developed in your opening brief. What you did was you merely referred to your argument at trial, and of course, we don't hunt around in transcripts for arguments.
I didn't try the case, number one. I had to hunt for what they did at trial. And what I found was...
And you wanted us to be punished.
No. I got to be punished. I take the punishment. But to me, as an attorney who practices in both forums, I didn't see how you could just create a fictitious offense without searching or looking. It doesn't exist. There's no such crime as Illinois extortion. There is intimidation, but then here is a jury considering whether he committed the offense of Illinois extortion. How do we just transfer it and make up a word? And as a matter of fact, the court, what I did argue was, and the arguments as you, in the transcripts, ultimately the court makes a decision based on Black's Law Dictionary as a definition.
But
that was the ultimate decision.
In any event, would it really matter here? Because the actions here were to obtain money and narcotics.
It had to do with the force issue. In other words, it had to do with the force issue, and that was the delineation. I mean, you just can't define an offense statutorily on the United States Code and then define it in Illinois and transfer one title to the other and say they are the equivalent. I can see if you had a sentencing of a defendant, if you had a sentencing of a defendant and it's a crime of a similar nature, although it doesn't have a similar name, in another state. For example, narcotics, it could be called something else, for enhancements, but for substantive evidence, okay, it wasn't in fact extortion as defined. There was no federal crime of extortion. It was only intimidation.
But what the judge has done is he has simply, assuming we are considering this and it's not waived, he's done what people do in instructions, which is to describe for the jury what exactly, in some perhaps less technical language, it needs to find, it needs to be thinking about. And unless there's something inaccurate about what the judge has described there, that's ordinary jury instruction language.
Your Honor, I would only say this, that if I were to pull out a copy of the Illinois Criminal Code and look for a crime of extortion, I would not find it. It wouldn't exist.
I understand what you're saying, but if the judge is right in substance that these are the things, you know, extortion is a word the jury's probably heard before. You know, they watch CSI or something. You know, they've heard of it, and the judge is telling them these are the things that are going to count. And if that part's right, then why do we care if you call it the Illinois extortion statute or the Illinois intimidation statute or anything else?
Well,
indeed, if he called it Fred, it wouldn't make any difference.
Fred, I guess I just, maybe because I'm looking in the old chapter 38 for an offense that doesn't exist. I guess maybe it's my way of thinking.
Okay.
And that's just the way I would see it if I were looking at two things. I was looking for some definition. I wouldn't go to Black's Law Dictionary for it. His authority. If I may just... I want to go on to two things. I don't mean to jump around here.
Your 10-minute total is closing in on expiring, but you can allocate your time.
I think I'll wait and come back.
When you come back, by the way, you can make a rebuttal argument. You can't make any new arguments. Right? You know that.
I need another minute, gentlemen.
All right.
Okay.
As I say, you can
allocate. No, I agree. I understand, Judge. Okay. I just very, very... simply put, I've referred to Macedo with regard to this was at least 5 kilograms of cocaine. There was no jury finding with regard to this 150 kilograms, which took Mr. Majanowski, along with his enhancements, which I believe also, according to Macedo, are having raised those issues at the district court level, would have to be revisited. A, the abusive position of trust is not referred to in the judge's sentencing memorandum. She talks about it, and the judge talks about it in her sentencing, but when it came to the memorandum to give the enhancement, she didn't give it. So it is an exhibit. And the same would go for the other enhancements, I believe. And I'm going to sit on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Mr. Shabbat.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. the government concedes that there needs to be a Palladino remand with respect to the sentencing for Lissette Rivera. I would also note that the government makes another concession with respect to the firearm enhancement that Ms. Rivera received, which I think is fatal to its position. At page 78 of its brief, it says as follows, a careful review of the record reveals no direct evidence of Rivera's knowledge of the use of firearms by her co-conspirators.
But then how do you respond to the government's argument that cases in this circuit recognize that firearms are reasonably foreseeable in these large-scale narcotics conspiracies?
Well, I think that in some circumstances it can be appropriate to apply a foreseeability analysis in a large-scale drug conspiracy, but I don't think the rule that has emerged from the circuit is that in all cases there has to be an enhancement. And I think when there's absolutely no evidence of knowledge of the use of firearms by co-conspirators, no actual use by the defendant, his or herself, and no presence when there's any firearms being used by anybody else, it's pretty hard to conclude from that therefore there must have been firearms used. If that is the rule, then in every drug case, because we all know firearms are used, tools of the trade, as this court has held, in drug offenses, in every case there should be a firearm enhancement.
Is it your argument that Rivera never saw the
firearm? It is my argument. That is correct. And the government concedes that she was never present at any time in which any co-conspirator ever possessed any weapon. And remember, Your Honors, that...
What is the significance of any of this? The mandatory minimum sentence for your client is 120 months. She was sentenced to 97 months. I mean, she should be thanking her lucky stars. I don't see how the sentence could go down lawfully. I can easily see how the government could have filed a cross appeal in quest of the remaining months to make it a legal sentence. What does any of these have to do with a sentence?
Well, Your Honor, I don't agree with the conclusion that her sentence was 120
months.
Jury
verdict found more than 5 kilograms of cocaine. That creates a mandatory minimum sentence of 120 months, does it not?
No, it does not, Your Honor. Not in this case, Your Honor, because unless you overrule Young, which says that in determining the mandatory minimum, you don't look to the drugs involved as a whole in the conspiracy. You look to an individual person's agreement and participation, is what you held in Young, that the analysis that applies for fixing the statutory maximum is not the same analysis that applies for fixing the mandatory minimum. That's what Judge Manning ruled, and I think correctly so. The government has not appealed, Your Honor, and so that issue is not before this court. And so we are at a place where it's our view that Ms. Rivera can receive a substantially less sentence than she has received. And one of the ways is if this court reverses the firearm enhancement as being inappropriately applied, which is what we...
I don't, however, see how that's compatible with the jury verdict.
How the determination that it's under 120 months is compatible with the jury verdict? It is, because the analysis that the jury made with respect to what all of the individuals involved in the conspiracy were involved in is different than the analysis...
Yes.
That
Rivera was convicted on that count.
Yes, but that had nothing to do with fixing the mandatory minimum. It had to do with determining what the statutory maximum was. It had nothing to do with what the mandatory minimum was. In this court has made that distinction in Young and has said that in Young you don't determine what the conspiracy as a whole was involved in. You look to what an individual person's participation was and what was foreseeable to that individual person. So it's a completely different test. By the way,
do you think that survived Booker?
I'm not sure that
the role of the judge in engaging in fact-finding to trump the jury verdict. Booker rather looks in the opposite direction, don't you think? I've long thought that Booker would not be an unalloyed joy for the defense bar.
I think the question is uncertain. I think the answer depends on whether or not what the proper analysis or what the proper evaluation is in terms of a legal standard. I think the jury will be called upon to make determinations about mandatory minimums, and it will be binding. But I think the proper analysis has to be employed as to what the jury is to look to, what the jury is to determine is the proper standard. I believe that the proper standard is what the individual defendant foresaw and agreed to. I don't believe there's a single mandatory minimum that applies to all defendants based on the charge that set forth in the indictment. But
so, and just to cut to the chase, you are looking for a full remand for your client, not a Palladino remand.
I am. We are.
And you're willing to cut. You really want a full remand, because one thing that can happen on a full remand is that we can tell the judge that she has to go up to 120 months.
Well, I don't believe you could do that, because
we can.
That issue is not before this court.
A full remand means everything is on the table. It is not asymmetric.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the only issues that you should remand and with instructions are those that have been appealed. There hasn't been any issue appealed with respect to drug amount on Rivera.
A full remand.
Perhaps, Mr. Chobot, you should go home, think about this, and send us a supplement with your final decision after you've discussed it with your client.
I would do that. Would the 5 days be adequate?
Sure.
And should I do that just in the form of a sort of a pleading motion rather than a brief?
Or
just let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chobot. Mr. Clancy.
If it pleases the court, Mike Clancy on behalf of Omar Feliciano. Mr. Feliciano's conviction should be reversed outright or remanded for a new trial based on the Fifth Amendment, his Fifth Amendment right, which was violated by the prosecutor's rebuttal argument at trial. In William v. Lane, this court took the statement of a prosecutor of, she told it to you and nobody else told you anything different. They found that in that statement, it was an indirect reference to the defendant's failure to testify in a violation of the Fifth Amendment, that the prosecutor manifestly intended to comment on the defendant not testifying.
That refers to the defendant, whereas the statement you're complaining about is, it's not the first time that a lawyer's come in with no defense and jumped up to equate the lawyer to the client and assume that because the lawyer has no defense, there's nothing. You know, the only way it could have come in is through the defendant, thus a Fifth Amendment comment. Seems to me a couple of steps down the road.
I respectfully disagree. I believe when you make the comment, it's not the first time a lawyer has come in with no defense. I believe that is absolutely on the same level as a witness told you something and you didn't hear any different. There is no difference, in my humble opinion, when a prosecutor says it's not the first time a lawyer's come in here without a defense. I believe that they're absolutely comparable. And I think
are you arguing that this is a direct or an indirect comment on a defendant's failure to take the stand?
I believe the juror can. My argument is that a juror could take it either as a direct or indirect.
Because if it's indirect, then, you know, there are a couple of additional steps. You know, is this? I don't know. It just seems to me no defense means there's no alibi. There's no nothing. There's so many possibilities other than direct testimony from the defendant.
I believe that a jury, first of all, the trial court obviously thought that there was something wrong with the statement because they had sustained the objection. I think that the mistake that the trial court made is they didn't take that next step, which if you look at my first argument in my individual brief on the lack of evidence of my client being a member of this conspiracy, that based on that and totality of the evidence, that statement becomes now a bigger issue, and that the court fell short of what they should have done, and they should have ordered a mistrial at that point.
Mr. Clancy, is it your argument that fronting without more, can never be enough to establish a conspiracy rather than a mere buyer-seller relationship?
I believe that one issue is not enough. Or that one factor is not enough, and that one factor is not in it itself evidence enough to say that he was a member of the conspiracy. When you look at Thomas and Contreras and you look at the different factors that the court discusses in there, such as a level of commitment, expectation by between Feliciano and Martyr. None of it is there. The only evidence at trial that he was a member of this conspiracy, if you look at the cases Thomas and Contreras, is this fronting, which I believe...
I mean, there was an ongoing relationship involving multiple instances in which cocaine was provided on credit, and the amounts involved here were surely high enough to indicate a shared stake in the narcotics venture. So surely we have more than just the fronting of the cocaine.
I don't believe there was. I believe that this was a buyer-seller relationship. The members of this conspiracy, Martyr and the other defendants, they sold large amounts of cocaine. Because Mr. Feliciano, on a few occasions, and less than what was in Thomas, which was seven, there was less than seven buys by Feliciano from any members of this conspiracy. The amounts differed, and also the exact amount of fronting, I believe, was in question through the evidence. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Clancy. Mr. Blumenthal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Martin Blumenthal. I represent Alina Liss. Your Honors, our strongest argument here now is constitutional. The Booker and Blakely cases clearly, squarely address the issues of concerning the sentencing. First, as to Booker, the jury's verdict merely found that there was at least 5 grams. Of kilograms of cocaine and at least 50 grams of cocaine base without finding an exact amount. So the Booker case squarely addresses that. And as far as the enhancement that Ms. Liss received for perjury and for the gun enhancement, I believe Blakely squarely addresses those issues. There was never any indictment for perjury or gun.
Do you need to spend your time on this? The government isn't contesting a Palladino
okay.
remand.
But the other issues that we raised, Your Honor, obviously our disproportionate sentence may be moot. The other issue I wanted to bring is Ms. Liss's transfer to Ogle County seemed to skirt, if not directly affect, her right to have counsel available to her during her appeal.
But Mr. Blumenthal, I mean, the thing about that that struck me, looking at the conversation between the district court and counsel, is that the district court seemed to me to leave the door open to go back to her if there was a serious problem coordinating things. She basically says, let me know. And apparently nobody ever said anything. And so I don't know what else she could do. There are all kinds of reasons why people sometimes need to be housed in different facilities. And I'm not saying 90 miles is the world's most convenient, but it's not impossible.
Your Honor, the court's direction to me was is if I were actually denied access to her. But the problem was not getting access to her. The problem was going 90 miles out to Ogle County to consult with her rather than being across the street at the MCC.
Well, but you didn't. That wasn't a daily event. I mean, the judge seemed to contemplate that, you know, you'd spend some period of time reviewing things, maybe accumulate a bunch of matters that you wanted to discuss with your client, call ahead, make sure she was really going to be there that day, and then go out. I'm not saying that, you know, unless you like listening to books on tape, you know, you really want to drive 180 miles, but the fact is it's doable.
Yeah, of course, Your Honor, it's doable, and as I brought out in my brief, it's also doable if she were transferred elsewhere in the country, or as I said, even in Guantanamo Bay. Of course, they'll let me see her.
Well, I mean, but that's a
that's an extreme but
degree, surely.
But my problem is where is the line that violates her constitutional right to counsel? That I don't know, but it seems to me that it's close. Making me drive 90 miles each way certainly puts a damper on my schedule, because not being my only case.
True. Okay.
Okay. Other than that, Your Honors, I had nothing else to bring to the court's attention.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Blumenthal. Ms. Peckren.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'll start first with Defendant Feliciano's argument about the buyer-seller theory. This was not his theory at trial. His theory was that he was an informant for Defendant Majanowski, who was the Chicago police officer, as is evidenced in his closing argument and also in his cross-examinations. There was, as set forth in the government's brief, there was substantial evidence to support a conspiracy. It was not merely that there was just fronting. There was other evidence in addition to continued fronting that would show a prolonged cooperation between these parties, standardized dealings, large quantities of drugs, including, for example, at one time, one of the co-conspirators, Juan Martir, moved to Miami. And in order to continue supplying his customers in Chicago with these large quantities of cocaine, he then had his former girlfriend and the mother of his child arrange to supply these individuals and specifically approached Mr. Feliciano to explain what the new arrangement would be. This shows an interest by Mr. Martir in Mr. Feliciano's drug distributions. It's not merely a buyer-seller isolated sanitary relationship. In addition, there was testimony about Martir giving Mr. Feliciano money to invest, and I think this shows that there is ample evidence of the conspiracy, and there's further evidence set forth in the government's brief. It's not just the fronting, although I think the fronting is substantial and significant here.
I would appreciate your answering a few questions that I have about Ms. Rivera.
Certainly.
In determining that she was not a minor participant in the conspiracy, the district court appeared to rely solely on her status as a courier, without which it concluded that the scheme would not work. But wouldn't that mean that drug couriers are precluded in all instances from being considered as minor participants?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. In this case, we're talking about a courier who went to the great lengths of traveling from Chicago to Miami, who then stayed with the stayed in a hotel and interacted with the defendants, with whom she had previously lived or interacted on another basis, and was strapped up with kilos to travel back to Chicago. There was also other evidence of her involvement in the conspiracy that was presented at trial as set forth in the government's brief, but I don't believe that this is not, she wasn't simply a courier in the sense that that was her only interest in this operation.
No, but did Judge Manning at any time identify the proper definition of a minor participant and consider whether Rivera was a participant who was less culpable than others, but whose role could not be considered minimal? I didn't see it.
Your Honor, I'm trying to remember what's in the sentencing transcript. I know that the judge did comment on the fact that she had listened to the evidence against Rivera over the course of the trial, which, of course, the trial itself took 2.5 months, and that Rivera's role was substantial and integral to the conspiracy.
Right, and that's what she said, period.
But that's not right, but that's not what Application Note 5 says. It says a minor participant is one who is less culpable than most other participants, but whose role could not be described as minimal. In other words, don't even go below, you know, up, down to the three-level the four-level decrease. And I have the same concern Judge Rovner does in terms of the district court's focusing on this relative inquiry that the application note seems to call for.
It seemed to me that what Judge Manning was saying is a defendant cannot be a minor participant if her role in the conspiracy is one necessary for a conspiracy to succeed. Can you identify any role in the conspiracy that isn't necessary? I mean, from couriers to security to sellers to those who cook the crack. What isn't necessary?
Well, Your Honor, I believe it is necessary, and I understand the court's concern.
I must say, I don't even understand the concept of being necessary for a conspiracy to succeed. A federal drug conspiracy doesn't even require an overt act. The crime is the agreement. The only thing that's necessary to the agreement is the agreement. No other act is necessary. So what's the role of necessity?
I think perhaps what the district court was...
You've either agreed or you haven't. If you've agreed, you've committed the crime. If you haven't, you haven't committed the crime. No other act is ever necessary.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think what the district court was focusing on here in rejecting the minimal participant...
Minor participant,
excuse me, Your Honor, was that the... This is not a situation where, for example, somebody held the drugs in her purse for her boyfriend. This was somebody who actively participated for a profit, who the testimony shows that the couriers were paid $1,000, $1,500 for these trips, and who did so on more than one occasion, who at times lived in a stash house where cocaine was cooked into crack, for example. I don't believe those things... At least the stash house is not cited in the district court's reasoning in its sentencing transcript. However, there is evidence to support that she was a player. She's not the most significant player in the conspiracy by far. That is true. However, I think it would be unfair to call her a minor participant in this conspiracy, given that she was one of the people integral to ensuring that the conspiracy would succeed.
You know, a little bit more